Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corin Chide here, your host for this weekend's edition, also your host throughout the week on our website, kereport.com, and podcast, The KE Report. Please be sure to go back through our website and podcast, click on some of those daily editorials, market updates, and company updates that we recorded throughout the week on this weekend show. Because the last couple weekend show, we focused so much on resource investing and diving down into the resource stocks. Well, unfortunately, those sectors broadly are still under quite a bit of pressure. I wanted to look a little bit more big picture in terms of a number of different markets, some of the recent rebounds that we have seen, and in the back half of the show, go into the energy sector to talk about a couple companies that have had some pretty big acquisitions and mergers announced. So to kick off the show, we are chatting with Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies. Rick writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors. This is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. On the retail and individual side, check out In the Know Trader, that website, which has three products, a monthly report called 7-Eleven, where Rick picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs with the goal to beat the S&P, a weekly report called the Tactical Trader Report, and a daily report called the Daily Tip Sheet that just started this year. Now, Rick, I wanted to follow up on a note that you sent to subscribers back on October 29th, where you said that due to what was going on in the markets and what you were watching, you saw a bit of a shift into more of a deflationary environment. Now, that was also when markets were broadly breaking down, but they have rebounded in this time. So, Rick, in terms of this balance between deflationary environment, inflationary environment, where do you stand currently?
It's actually moved back to neutral with the risk-on move we've seen since that late October low. So what I had indicated is that we were starting to get some whiffs of deflationary-type price action. But again, that with the surge that we've seen in the stock market and the turnaround in the bond market, that has gone back towards a more neutral setting right now. So the models, or that particular model, is not suggesting deflation, a particularly strong deflationary or inflationary environment going forward. That's not to say that the inflation that we've seen so far cannot persist. I suspect it will, in fact. But what that model tries to do is anticipate down the road the chances of a change in the environment before it's ever obvious to the marketplace. And like I said, it showed whiffs of the beginnings of a deflationary environment, which made sense given that rates had gone up to 5%, stocks were selling off, the S&P was down to 4,100 or so 2 Fridays ago. But again, that has shifted since back into a more neutral stance as far as that particular model.
Well, Rick, another takeaway from the piece you sent out to subscribers was, I guess, the ferocity of the rally we saw in general equities. And you had said, no, I never saw 6% coming in just 5 sessions. But then things got a little overheated on the sentiment side. And you pointed out that neither the mega bulls or the mega bears got it right. What are you looking at as far as this recent rally in the equities? Is there some teeth to it? Could it actually be a tradable bottom now? Or was that just a dead cat bounce?
I'm going to stick with what I've kind of been saying for a while now, is that the mega bulls and the mega bears are going to be disappointed come year end. We all know who they are. They're on TV and get quoted all the time. And there's a group of them that sit in each one of the camps. And I'm more inclined to think that neither of them will particularly be happy come year end. They'll both make excuses for why they still think they're right and perhaps their timing was wrong. But I can make the case that between now and year's end, you do not see the big Santa Claus rally. You also don't see the big sell-off. We saw the sell-off. We saw the reaction at S&P 4100 and the bounce that we got from there when a week and a half ago, Fed Chair Powell gave the sense that the Fed is done hiking rates for now. And the market zoomed up, mostly a combination of new money coming in as well as shorts covering. The outflows in the past 2 weeks on the equity side had been huge when the S&P broke under 4250. And the public was a large seller. And then Powell saying what he did essentially reversed a lot of that. Now, what he said yesterday on Thursday, where he reiterated and kind of walked back what he had said the prior week in the press conference after the FOMC rate announcement, was that they completely leave the door open to further raising rates if the data shows that they need to, which is just another way of saying we're data dependent, which is what they've said all along. We'll raise rates as needed, which is what they've said all along. And I think the market had overreacted to the upside on the fact that they thought rates were done simply because rate hikes were done simply because he said, even then, we leave the door open to raising as needed. The reality is inflation is not close to their intended target. The effects have still not been fully felt in the marketplace of the interest rate hikes. And although near term, we certainly can make the case that the highs we saw by 5% in the US 10-year are the near term high, I'm not going to make a huge bet that they can't go higher over time. I had said the last time we spoke a month ago, and even perhaps the month prior to that, that my target in the U.S. 10-year that I had put out 6 months ago to clients and reiterated in almost every report since was a target of 4.88 to 5.06%. And we got to intraday, 5.02% is the highest high. We backed off from there down to, you know, we're in the 4.5, 4.6 area. You know, I've done my job, let's put it that way, in having identified months in advance the likely peak, or at least a very tradable peak from that 4.88 to 5.06 level. So, yes, I'm more inclined to be a buyer of bonds than to be a seller of bonds. And the pullback could be as little as about, one of the downsides, I think 4.42 and then 3.91 to 3.67 is the range. If we get a full bond market rally, that's how much I think bonds can move up to and rates can go down to if we get a significant rally. Between now and year's end, we've got a strong update today to finish the week. I'm leaning into this rally right here on a tactical basis. And as long as we stay under 4,400, which is only 18 points away right now from where we are, I don't mind being tactically playing the negative piece here simply because what Powell said yesterday should take away a lot of the reason the bulls came storming back over the last week and a half. It's basically saying, if we need to raise rates, dependent upon the data, we will. And that should be enough to make bulls pause. If I look at where the outperformance is coming today in the market, it's coming from technology and communication services. No surprise. This is where the bulk of the Magnificent Seven are located. This is a pure mega, mega cap rally. Go look at the results of the rest of the stock market year to date. And anyone who's in equal weighted S&P, equal weighted NASDAQ, or the average stock, you're virtually up nothing or just a few percent this year. This is all the big mega cap names driving the large cap indexes.
All right, that covers it there, Rick. I was going to ask you what you saw by leadership, but boom, you just broke it down. Tech and communication services, the mega 7 high cap stocks. Let's talk about some other sectors then. Let's talk about gold and gold stocks, starting off with gold. Look, gold touched its head on that $2,000 level, and as it has done so many times, it has reversed not too strongly as we're recording this. It's $1,943. Still a generally good price for gold. And again, we will get into the gold stocks, but overall, what's your outlook for gold in this environment where we have seen now rates move down?
I tell clients today to nibble on gold. There's a couple reasons that you don't even need to risk $20 or so in gold right now if you're a buyer right around here. So gold, I'm looking at it, gold's right around $1,945 an ounce on COMEX. So that's December futures, and that's the front month. I kind of think right around in here is not a bad place to nibble. I did some buying back in October, literally on the lows, but never thought at the time that we were going to see the big rally that we did from, let's call it 18 and a quarter to almost 2000. I ran after a $60 profit just thinking, look how smart I am. I just picked the exact place to buy gold. Never had a single day's drawdown, but I looked at it as potentially just nothing more than a quick trade. I didn't see that we were going to get the type rally that we did. We stalled over $2,000 an ounce again. It's like paperwork, you know, it just always seems to happen. You get above $2,000 and gold can't rally. But the fact that we've sold off now in the pattern that we've sold off, and today is actually the ninth consecutive day that the closing price would be lower than the closing price from 4 days prior. That's part of a well-known institutional model designed by a gentleman named Tom DeMarc many years ago. It would suggest to me that gold actually could get a bounce fairly close from here. And I would say anywhere from about 1920 to 1955 or so is where I would expect to see gold put in a tradable bottom now. And this all relates to, if I'm right that the US dollar peaked between 107 and 109, which has been my target, and then we had the strong sell-off, which was last week's sell-off, I actually think the dollar's going down to about 103.5 now. And if that's the case, it could potentially be the catalyst for gold to finally maybe actually make new all-time highs. And that would surprise a heck of a lot of people. We've been in a multi-year big sideways trading pattern from let's call it round numbers 2000 to 2050 on the upside, and downside probably about what 1650 or so. So you know, a big $400 range. If this thing ever can get the catalyst to break out, and look at what you know Bitcoin's doing and how that's moving higher, and there are reasons we'll talk about that in a minute. That Bitcoin is moving the way it is. But if you look at these as kind of alternative assets to safety type assets relative to conventional equities and bonds as hedge instruments, I can make the case that perhaps the low we saw in October is the last low gold is going to see before ramping up to take out all-time highs.
Well, Rick, you must be a mind reader today, because that's exactly what I was going to ask you about, is what do you think it would take to break it out to all-time highs? And I guess it correlates to that dollar pulling back and other macro factors that are driving some of these alternative safe havens like gold and Bitcoin higher. To Corey's point, the gold mining stocks have had a completely different set of fortunes than the actual underlying metals price. Do you think a breakout in gold would actually lift these gold stocks and gold equities higher? How are you looking at the gold equities in relation to the metal?
Yeah, gold equities have had a really hard time. They cannot really get going. If we look at the GDX, it's still trading in the upper 20s. If I remember correctly, it had maybe peaked in the lower 40s a couple of years ago. Just never really can get going. But that's in alignment to the fact that gold really, you know, gold had its big up move from 2015 to 2020 or so. And then for the last 3 years, it's done nothing. It's just trading in a big range. Gold equities are similar. Newmont was trading, I saw earlier this week, Newmont was trading on the lowest lows. So even something like GDX is doing better than one of its key names. Today, specifically, the price action in the GDX actually fills a price gap from early October. We could be getting closer to a bottom. I think if gold makes new all-time highs, GDX and gold equities are going to rally. Do I have a reason for them to make new all-time highs? I don't. They're too far away from their all-time highs to think that they're going to get that type of lift. But in general, I would say the mid-20s in GDX is where, I'd look for bottoms to be. And in their own way, they will follow gold, but not precisely.
Okay. Well, there's your outlook there. What about Bitcoin? Because, Bitcoin has been on a bit of a run here, and it seems to have, in a way, stabilized around this 35,000 level. As we're chatting, it's a little over 37,000. Now, the reason some people are saying is that maybe we're getting closer to these ETFs being approved, but I don't know. Quite frankly, Bitcoin was trading in a range for a while, and now it's broken higher and has not reversed right away. So what are you seeing in the potential of Bitcoin here?
So I've got some conflicting signals here, because I actually had clients eight or 9 weeks ago. We got long Bitcoin in my weekly tactical trader report for In the Know Trader, and we took profits yesterday. So we are now out of Bitcoin. We made 25% on the trade, so it's a huge gain for a 2 month trade, way above what you would typically expect to make, in that amount of time. But I've got, from timing models, I'm taking my profits here, and I'm never going to not run with a 25% profit. From actual price movement, unless price breaks back down under, probably say, about $32,000, again, I'm using the futures market, so this is front month futures. And in the case of Bitcoin, there is a contract every month. I would say if somewhere around $32,000 can't get penetrated on the downside, then this really has a chance to run higher, first to around $45,000, but it's got a measured move up to about $55,000. I'm going to watch to see. Look, if I'm right, having taken profits at $37,000 plus, and you got to move back down towards $32,000, that's a pretty good trade to have taken profits on and then to come back in. And there should be pretty good support now near 32,000. You had a double high or even a triple high that it broke out from there. But I think at this point, it's quite overbought. I'm going to pull up one of the polls that I'm very fond of is called the Daily Sentiment Index. And it's something that people need to subscribe to, and it's not inexpensive. So as of yesterday, interesting, Bitcoin was only 48% bulls. I would have thought it would be in the 70s by now, given the run. So in that respect, it's really not overbought from a sentiment point of view. Like I said, I've taken profits here from a trading perspective. My own personal investment in Bitcoin, which is very small, I've told you in the past, I just don't believe in the product and what crypto is, but I have a very small, less than 1% of my total portfolio position in Bitcoin, but to me, it's a flyer. If it gets up to 100 grand or 200 grand, the way people said, I'll be happy. If it goes to zero, it won't hurt me because it's such a small position. So I own some. I'll continue to own some. From a trading point of view, I can make the case to get out of it now and look to put it back on. But it's such a small position, I'll just let it go. And if in 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, or 20 years, it ever gets, up the way some of the people say it will, I'll make some money on it. But I don't really waste my time looking at crypto.
Thanks for sharing your levels there, Rick. And yeah, it's one of those speculative assets that is fun to trade, but definitely something not for the meek of heart because of how volatile it is. But another asset class that's been pretty volatile lately has been oil. I mean, look at the energy market, Rick. It's been all over the place. It's been in the low 90s up to 92, 93, down to 74, 75. At the time of this recording, back up a little bit, around 77 and some change. But the oil market has been in a range and just whipsawing people back and forth. The bulls and the bears are frustrated. How are you looking at the energy space?
Well, let's start with oil itself before we talk about the energy space collectively, because when we get into the energy space, it's a much broader discussion and it's influenced by more than just the price of oil. Oil futures themselves, 2 days ago, I told clients that I'd be buying oil on the day that, now I look back, looks like. So this was on Wednesday night's report, my daily tip sheet. Wednesday's report, I told people to nibble on oil. I thought it was likely going to have a trading bottom. It's up nicely. Well, it's $1.36. It's not that much, but it's up today. If it were to close now, there's actually a bullish pattern in the Japanese candlestick realm of things called a morning star. So go back 3 days, a big, large down day where you opened on the high and closed on the low. 2 days ago, what's called a doji, a complete indecision day, open and close, same price. And today, so far, we have opened on the low and we are trading right now near the high. So that is generally a short-term bullish signal. I would expect that to get us to $80 to $82 or so and then reevaluate. So from a trading point of view, things, the biggest catalyst for this decline was actually the bump oil got right after the Hamas invasion and brutality inside Israel, and people bought oil on that, and it rallied for, you know, a couple of days, and then that was it. And you got a lot of people stuck long who are now getting washed out. And what I tried to do a couple of days ago was buy the, what I was determining to be the end of the kind of oil puking that was taking place from the longs who had bought on that Mideast conflict, and we're finally going to get forced out. I kind of like oil down here. If you look back into June and July, the 75 to 77 level is where the move really broke out to on the upside for the move that got to $95. $95 had been our target in print. We said mid-90s for the upside target, so we got that. And now I'm nibbling again, honestly.
Okay, so what about that broader energy sector discussion there? You alluded to some different drivers here outside of just oil. What are you watching for the broader energy sector?
So when you think about the energy space, we immediately go to, you know, what's oil doing? But if you get down to the indexes and the equities in the space and the ETFs, they're also greatly influenced by the price of natural gas. And natural gas broke out above $3.03 in the U.S. This is the Henry Hub futures contract. Got up to just about $3.65 or so, $3.65, and now has backed off, and it is close to the $3 level again. So you've got both the oil has sold off recently, and natural gas has gone right back down. So when you're looking at the space, you've really also have to include, because of something like, when you look at XOP, one of the most traded ETFs to represent energy, and it's the oil and gas index. So you've got to pay attention also to the gas side of things and the influence that that has on the overall index. XLE, the S&P 500 energy index, has had a very decent year. It's pulled back recently and is potentially forming a head and shoulders top. I went into that on a massive overweight back in August of 2021. And I trimmed this year and then came in June. I went full on overweight again with 1.8 times its benchmark weighting is how much I was long it in the 7-Eleven report, which, as you said in the introduction, that's a report I write and comes out once a month. And the goal of it is to beat the S&P 500 by being only no more than 7 of the 11 macro spider ETFs. Energy is one of the 7 that I'm in. I trimmed it on November 1st down to about, I think it's 1.6 or 1.5 times its weighting. So I still have a decent overweight, but well off the almost 2 double weighting that we had. Generally, I like energy. I think the names are still relatively cheap. And long-term, remember, XLE was the worst performing S&P sector for 20 years. Between 2000, these ETFs, the XLs, the spider ETFs came out, I think it was 1998. from when they came out until about 2020, nothing was as horrific an investment as XLE was out of the sectors. I think energy, you know, got massively washed out when oil broke underneath $0 a few years ago. I mean, the sector and the valuations got to the point that longer term energy got so cheap that it's been a sector I've been very involved in now for over 2 years. And the outperformance I have in the 7-Eleven report, which as of October 31 was outperforming the S&P 500 by an additional 13.65% above what you've made in the S&P over that same time, as far as the passive index, we've made an additional 13.65% return over that 3-year and 3-month period, largely because I had such a big overweight in energy. I've made money in other pieces too, for sure. But the energy component was a material contribution to the massive outperformance that we've had.
Well, Rick, just one more quick question on energy. You mentioned XLE, which is really the biggest producers, the largest companies in the space, XOP, some of the smaller producers, some of the developers, some of the exploration companies. There's one other ETF that we continue to get a lot of questions on, and that's Oil Services, OIH. And that's the pipeline companies, the drilling companies. That's kind of marched to the beat of its own drum. It's kind of bifurcated from oil and nat gas stocks. And I wondered if you had any thoughts on oil service companies.
Interesting you say that, because in the weekly tactical trader report, and I'm pulling up this week's report that came out yesterday. So we have been short OIH in that report now since as of yesterday, it closed at just about 314 and a half. We have a short on at 341. So we're up very nicely on the short. My downside target is 306 to 303. So we're only about 3% away from it as of yesterday. I'm lowering my buy stop on it to protect profits, but I've been bearish this for, let's see, if I'm short at 341, it's got to be probably 5-6 weeks already, looking for the breakdown, and we're getting it. I mean, this week has been significant. Took out the lows from about 5 weeks ago, and getting closer to my target. Now at the target, I'm happy to cover and walk away from being short.
All right, Rick, thank you as always for your time and for jumping around, sharing your outlooks for a wide range of sectors, ones that we talk about on a regular basis. But I have to say, for the few years that we have had you on the show, I've been very impressed at how you really do filter through the noise and simply call it as you see it. And usually these markets do kind of move in that direction that you are looking for. And man, it just seems like overall, it has been a tough year for the perma bears and perma bulls. I think that just goes to show some of these wide ranges that almost every market is trading in. Rick, thank you again for your time on this weekend show. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks for having me.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.